Hi, guys. It's me, Duncan, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And today is a really cool episode because I make a big announcement at the end of the episode. Dustin actually made it for me. And also because it was one of my favorite conversations that I've ever had. So I'm excited to upload this one. I'm not going to do a long intro. We're just going to dive right into it. But first, some super quick business. This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. If you're stuck in life right now, as I was at one point, I mean, you're never really stuck. You're always in a ever-flowing stream of unfolding creativity. It's just sometimes the creativity isn't unfolding with the rapidity that you would like it to unfold at. You might be in a job where you spend lots of time sitting at your desk surfing the internet, or you might be out of a job and spend a lot of time at your house surfing the internet, wasting your time, not really doing anything with that kind of strange aching feeling inside of you that makes you wish that you were perfecting yourself in some way. When I was stuck at a desk job, man, this sounds like a cheesy commercial. It really does sound like something you hear on late night TV, but God damn it, it's true. I started teaching myself stuff, and I got into my head. I guess I'd been reading The Count of Monte Cristo, which is a cool revenge book about a guy who gets unfairly imprisoned and very, very slowly escapes from prison while being taught by this old man. And the old man teaches him all kinds of cool shit, philosophy, business. And anyway, it's a really great revenge book. He gets out and fucks up a lot of motherfuckers. But I started thinking of my desk job as being trapped in some kind of prison, and I realized that I wasn't going to get out of there in a fast way. So what I started doing is, whenever I had time, in the same way in any great prison escape movie, when they slowly like take sand out into the yard, hiding it in their underwear, their shoe. In that same way, I started, like, instead of waste blowing time like surfing the internet, I started going to Lynda.com and learning how to do Photoshop, because at the time my idea was I'll get into some kind of graphic design business or something. I also was like teaching myself animation. I learned how to do After Effects. I learned how to use Photoshop, and now I use it to learn how to use Logic. Lynda is a really badass place that you can go to that's got very detailed videos that will take you to a professional level when it comes to using some of the incredible software that's out there right now, from Photoshop to After Effects to 3D animation. There are these incredible classes in there. And we've never had access to this kind of tech. It's really important to realize that in your computer, whatever you use to download this, probably is advanced enough to run some of the most incredible creativity software that exists out there. Humans didn't have access to this shit not very long ago, and the software is daunting when you first encounter it. It looks like you're staring at the control panel of a 747 or something like that. Lots of gauges, dials, knobs. But really, it's not that complicated. And interestingly enough, especially with the Adobe products, they all kind of run according to the same underlying system. So if you start learning one, then you're going to learn them all. If you learn Photoshop, then you're already learning After Effects. It's just the way it works. And if you learn Photoshop and After Effects, then you can suddenly, just using what exists on the internet, start making high-level animations using technology that some of the great animators of our time didn't have access to. And that's pretty wild to think about, that all you have to do is put yourself through these 20, 30-hour courses. Some of them aren't even that long. And at the end of those courses, you are going to be able to animate or shoot video that is could be comparable to some of the great movies that are out there right now. It's really weird how that works. It's really interesting. If you're kind of depressed or miserable about your life and you feel like you could be doing more and you feel stuck, it's like somebody who's in the wilderness surrounded by Bic lighters who feels like they can't start a fire. Like, you have surrounding you right now so much great software, and a lot of it is free, or at least temporarily free. You've got some of it subscription-based. All the Adobe stuff you could actually subscribe to. I don't remember how much it costs per month. I think it's like $10 a month, something like that. And you could have maybe $15 a month, and you have suddenly thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of great software. Combine that with lynda.com and you can start learning how to use it. And then combine that with the power of the internet and you could start publishing your creations to the entire planet instantaneously. It's pretty fucking cool. So go to lynda.com/family hour. If you sign up for a trial membership, you get it for 10 days. What that means is that if you wanted to, you could sign up for Lynda, train yourself in some bit of software, and then cancel your subscription, and you now know how to do some bit. You could, in those 10 days, you could learn so much. Like, some seminars that they give for a lot of this software don't last 10 days. They last 3 days. So in 10 days, you could really teach yourself a tremendous amount when it comes to design, software, to programming. You name it, it's all in there. Just go check it out, lynda.com/family hour. See if you like it. There's something really cool that happens when you start learning any new thing. You start that morphogenesis that your brain transforms. This is why in the Book of Five Rings, Miyamoto Musashi, did I say his name right? I've never done that before. I probably didn't. He recommends not just learning how to fight as a samurai, but learning poetry and all the other stuff, because he knew that just the exercise of learning somehow translates into every other aspect of your life. I've noticed that too. I will admit I have not been using Lynda lately as I should. I am definitely in a Hearthstone Witcher vortex. But I have used it in the past, and I have used it fairly recently with Logic, and it's just as cool as I remembered it. So go to lynda.com/family hour, sign up for a trial membership. It's a great way to support this podcast while improving your precious human existence. We're also brought to you by Amazon. Thank you to all of you who have been going through the Amazon portal, which is located in the comments section of any of the podcasts at dougatrussell.com. You don't need to go outside ever again, except to go to a park, to play frisbee, to walk your dog, or to make love in a behind a city park with some burly man whose anus smells like cinnamon and halls. You can go outside for the right reasons. You don't need to go driving your car to buy shit from some crap store when you can go through Amazon, through our portal. And by buying anything there, from toilet paper to lasers, you actually support the podcast, because they give us a very small percentage of anything that you buy. All you got to do is go through the Amazon portal, bookmark it, and you are now supporting the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And thank you for all of you who have been doing that. We also have a shop located at DuncanTrussell.com. I am adding some new merchandise to it very soon. I have ordered a bunch of these gigantic banners. If you've gone to any of the live shows, you've probably seen a banner hanging behind me. I ordered a lot of those. It's festival season, so if you want to really go hardcore, then you could create a giant Duncan Trussell Family Hour flag at whatever festival that you go to, and hopefully you will draw to you not only your soulmate, but a lot of mythological woodland creatures, and hopefully some great, healthy, legal, psychoactive substances that are going to make you feel great. Go to the store, won't you? When you buy anything, you're supporting this podcast and announcing your allegiance, not to this podcast, but to the creative force of the universe that we call Lord Nornog. All right, that's the intro. Today's guest is the president, CEO, emperor, and mastermind behind the podcast network that the Duncan Trussell Family Hour lives on, Feral Audio. There's a lot of great podcasts there. And the reason there's a lot of great podcasts there is because Dustin is one of the hardest workers I've ever met in my life. And he spends hundreds of hours a week. I don't know if it's hundreds, but at least 100 hours, 460 hours. He spends workaholic level hours spinning audio gold like some poor leprechaun trapped in a black bird cage by some dark necromancer who forces him to make gold, to weave gold for him at the cost of keeping his family alive. That happens all over the place, especially in Indonesia. And Dustin doesn't have a necromancer controlling him. The only necromancer forcing Dustin to weave the sweet sonic threads of Feral Audio is the desire of the listeners. And he's a really cool, amazing person who I am so happy to be friends with. So now, everyone, please open your third eyes, spread your legs apart, push your hand down in the top of your underwear, well, your right hand, with your left hand, rub some kind of cooling cream onto your nipples, light a cigarette, and sit back in your chair made of shoes and underwear to listen to my dear friend, Dustin Martian. Praise sweet Christ in heaven. Here we are. Dustin Martian.
Hello.
I call you Martian. It's Marshall.
No, it's my handle.
The Lord and Master, the King of Feral Audio, is here on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. How you been, man?
Good. Thanks for having me back. I still get messages like almost every 2 weeks about the one we did before. I didn't realize how many people would be affected by it, but
what do they say?
That I've had people say that like it really helped them or like changed them or influenced them. I had somebody email me that they moved to LA to do something and they were like inspired by it. But yeah, your fans have been nothing but sweet. It was like, yeah, it was weird. I think we did it and we were like, eh, you can put it out. We didn't think much because it was all like businessy stuff, but I think people walked away with something from it.
Which... Isn't that weird? You're not, this is why I love that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which is that you have a right to your action. You do not have a right to the fruits of your action, because no matter what you're doing, if you start getting caught up in the results instead of the moment of doing it, then it always doesn't look as good, or it always looks like you're wasting your time, or it always looks like you could be doing better, and your mind gets distracted, and then, you know, you get in your own way.
Yeah, like you're trying to inform the outcome, but you're going into it just trying to... I think we didn't plan on just talking about podcasts the whole time, but we did, and I listened to it like a couple months after. It's really good. Also has one of my favorite rants from you. You were super brokenhearted. It was awesome.
Ah, you know.
But things have changed.
Well, yeah, thank God. No kidding. Well, no, all those little heartbreaks, when they happen, you don't realize that they're all part of some... Well, you get to decide, really. I mean, I'm really into this Ram Dass Experiments in Truth Audible book right now. And it's particularly I'm into his idea that we function simultaneously on all these different frequencies, and you get to pick which frequency you want to tune into. So on one frequency, which is the frequency of depression, everything is meaningless. The world is catastrophic. It is actively trying to destroy you. Events are always moving in the direction of horror, failure, doom. This is one real level of the universe. Like, that's a real level. It's not, you know, when people say, get more positive, really what they're saying is tune into a different frequency, because the one you're tuning into right now, though it is completely valid, all you have to do is watch any nature documentary to understand that that is real, that cute little sweet things are always getting ripped apart by predators.
Yeah.
In nature, constantly. At this very moment, guaranteed, the cutest little baby thing, you name it, you name a little baby deer, ooh, that just the night before was snuggled up next to its sweet mama, right now, at this very moment, guaranteed, some little baby deer is getting its fucking leg gnawed on by a coyote while other coyotes watch. Maybe a bit of its entrails are poking out of a gaping hole in its stomach that got ripped open by this pack of coyotes. The mother's in terror running through the woods. The last moments the baby's experiencing is the most extreme pain anything can feel, which is being eaten alive by fucking coyotes. That is a real fucking frequency in the universe. So depressed people, when they tune into that, they're definitely tuning into something that's 100% real. It's just that's not all there is.
No, I'm like empowered by those philosophies. Like, I think when I'm my most existentially nihilist, like, it's really entertaining to me, and I love those thought experiments. But like, me, like, underneath everything is this, because I've had a little bit of work, and because I'm now in a group therapy where we do mindfulness exercises and stuff once a week with a group of people.
What is this group therapy? Can you explain it to me?
I got diagnosed with borderline personality disorder 6 months ago, and it's this emotional cognitive disorder. My mom has it, and I was sort of in denial. I thought I was bipolar, which I still might be, but it's there's no cap on BPD's emotion. So when somebody without BPD feels anger or sadness, usually there's a ceiling and it comes back down.
Right.
With BPD's, they've done like brain scans, and you know, people without it, their little parts of their brains flare up when they're angry or sad. With BPD's, their entire brain lights up.
Oh.
Your emotional side of your brain overrides your logical side of your brain. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like feeling feelings very intensely, and we have to. The good news about this thing is that this woman named Marsha Linehan started this radical kind of therapy called dialectic behavioral therapy, and I've been in it for 6 months. It's amazing. It's just about mastering it. They quote Cornfield in it all the time.
That's cool.
It's derived from Buddhism, and it's all this stuff that you got me into, or, you know, I've been reading about for a year, ended up in this program, and I realized that I had all of the tools there, and I'm still bad at it. I'm just not using them, because I'm still so ruled by psychic pain and emotion. So I'm clinically recognized by the state of California as emo. I have a card. I had a little...
You have a card?
I had a breakdown in October, which I was having like once or twice a year, and I walked into the Hollywood Mental Clinic, and which is a free clinic in Hollywood, and I waited like 6 hours, and they only let a few people in the program, and they accepted me, so I get amazing medication and treatment for, it's like rich people level medication for essentially free. I pay like...
What's the medication?
I'm on Wellbutrin XL and Lamictal. They're non-SSRIs. I asked for non-SSRIs, and they changed my life. Like, I have had day-to-day happiness and, like, energy that depression just sucked out of me. Like, I felt like I was 17 again when they started kicking in. Like, they've... And despite the stigmas, there's actually huge stigmas about BPDs in the psychiatric world. Like, a lot of people won't treat them. You need someone specifically trained.
Why? Why won't they treat them?
Because stalkers have like a high rate of BPD. A lot of therapists feel like they develop too much of an emotional connection to their therapists.
Oh.
And they don't have like a separation. And like, because with BPDs, like, I'm very sensitive to people's energy. Like,
yeah.
For a while, I was like, my therapist hates me. Like, I can just tell, like, the way
right.
she looks at me. And then another one was like, no, that's, like, your... There's two truths, is what they teach. That's the dialectic. Two truths can exist at the same time. It's not necessarily black and white, but there's one truth where... I'm trying not to put a judgment on it, but I'm going to use a judgment or a label. There's one truth where you're a bad, destructive person, and then there's the other truth that you're a beautiful, loved, person who does good in the world, even if you feel like you do bad in the world, two truths can exist at the same time.
Right.
And it's about not putting judgments on, like, using good or bad, just having radical acceptance that this is how reality is. Your suffering comes from trying to control it, and just using mindfulness as the base and all these different skills. Like, there's this thing called Dear Man, which is like, instead of like trying to get what you want by manipulating people, it's just asserting like what you want. It's like, this is what I want, and not apologizing for it. So one of the biggest things I've walked away with is stop saying sorry all the time.
Right.
And I haven't been saying sorry, and it's been like a huge change in my life.
That's a big change. Everything you're mentioning here, by the way, it seems like it's applicable to every single person on earth.
They should teach this in elementary school. It's called DBT therapy. And I just to put a pin in it, I waited way too long to get help. I just turned 30. I waited till I was 29. If I had done it years sooner, I would have been able to enjoy a lot more, like, this beautiful experience I've had in LA. Like, I put a lot of pressure on myself, but I was so lost in my mental illness, I never really enjoyed it.
Isn't that a strange aspect of being human, is that every other disorder, every other physical disorder, you publicly and openly will be like, yeah, I gotta go to the doctor, my leg's fucked up, my ankle's fucked up, whatever. And people are just gonna be like, yeah, okay. You're not gonna be like, wow, I'm gonna put, you know, every day I've been noticing that my leg's broken, and it really seems to be impairing my ability to walk, but I just don't want to, like, go to the doctor because people are going to think I'm fucking crazy because my leg's broken.
Yeah.
But, like, the moment the biocomputer gets a little wonky, that's, you start feeling ashamed of yourself. Like, something is inherently wrong with you. And then because the biocomputer is functioning in a unbalanced way, it's actually influencing your decision-making process, so it's causing you to, it's amplifying that sense of guilt and shame, because all it wants to do is amplify guilt and shame, because that's the imbalance.
And when, I mean, specifically, shame is a huge part of it with me, and it's a lot of self-crucifixion, and it's very neurotic, but it's this endless cycle. But it's called a wise mind. It's taking the logical side of your brain and the emotional side of your brain, and when, because when I go from annoyed to full-blown rage.
Right.
And there's no middle. And then it's like I forget to breathe. I'm all clenched up. And, like, I think this is, like, day-to-day stuff. I just saw a video of a guy with road rage, like, right by where I live. Somebody was filming it. This guy in a suit gets out, and they get out in the middle of traffic, and this guy in a suit punches this other guy in the face, and as he's falling down, a van comes, and his head is an inch away from getting squashed. They are in a parallel universe. That guy got his brain smushed, and this guy's in prison. They got so lucky. Like, something came in and swooped them up, but the video is, like, unreal, and it's that decision. Like, I was having a really bad day, and it was, like, last summer, and it was super hot, and I was driving, and this guy was harassing me with this car, like, weaving, like, trying to hit my car. And so I took a left, and I pulled over, and I was just like, what are you mad about? And he goes, huh, you fucking faggot. And then I got out of my car.
No.
And I opened my car, and I kicked the side of his car, and he drove away. And then at that moment, my car door shut behind me and locked with my phone, my keys in it, with the car running. And I was on my way to a podcast, and I had to can't. And I was like, I just started laughing. I was like, that's what anger gets you. Like, in that moment, like, I'm the one who got, I'm the one who suffered for getting angry.
Well, and it's fun to pretend that that was your guru who drove by. You haven't met him yet, but he's already started work on you. So he's like, oh, I got to give Dustin this great lesson today. Oh, yeah, okay, here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to drive by and call him a faggot. Because I'm a transcendental love being, and I get to do anything I want as long as it propels someone in the direction of wisdom. That's fucking cool, man. You know, that, that is a very interesting part of the universe to me, which is that the moment you make a decision that involves violence, anger, vengeance, the moment you let the arrow fly, the universe seems to really be inclined to teach you not to do that. And it'll happen instantaneously where it's like, wait, look, look.
Instant karma.
It really is. It's like the, you know, your door shutting and locking you in is no different from when your dog starts barking and you spray it with water to make it stop barking. It's as though there were some invisible force in the universe, and the way it sprays humans with water, unfortunately, is through very negative circumstances that result from decisions based on violence, and that's karma, right?
Yeah, it's just misfortune. It's just like wagging your finger by locking you out of your car. But I've had a lot of success, and I'm doing, I think, because I'm like focusing on my mental health, it's not perfect. When I started having to look at myself, there was, you know, 3 or 4 months in, I was worse than I ever was. And then they told me, like, this is what happens. Everything bad flares up. And when, cause I distract myself all day with work, my phone, friends, people I love, but it really is because as soon as I sit still and I try to meditate, I have that ringing in my ears from doing audio all day. I just have these bad thoughts, and then I quit the meditation before I can let them fall like leaves. Right. I just start just all of the things that I don't like about me. And I need to transcend above that still. So I'm working really, really hard. And if there's one thing I'm really proud of in the past year is just facing that like head on.
Yeah. What a victory that is. And I don't think people realize that this, it's like in war, if somebody is a hero in war, it doesn't matter if whatever army they were fighting for wins or loses, that doesn't make them not a hero anymore. They're still a hero. Even if you're some Nazi that threw himself on a grenade for your friends, you're still a hero
right there.
And so in that way, I think people get really confused when it comes to working on themselves, because they think that these momentary or temporary failures that inevitably happen are an indication of losing, when it's like, no, it's the most heroic. The act of turning into yourself and dealing with those bats flying around your belfry that you've been ignoring for so long, that is such a heroic act, and such an act that so many people don't do and don't want to do and will never do. The people who can't stand to be alone, the people who don't do self-analysis, the people who don't spend any amount of time, just that one moment where you look into yourself and you have the guts to admit, I'm not happy. So many people can't even do that. No. They go through the world, and they're like, oh, this is great, this is great, everything's great. But inside, always, like some terrible demonic homing beacon, just doot, 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 is the endless message coming from somewhere deep in their heart. Not happy, not happy, not happy, not happy. And you can either face that, or you can just pretend it's not there. Build a nice little callus around it, encase it in some crusty thing, and start pretending that when you're fucking hammered, that's when you're happy. Or start pretending that when you're lost in some deep intoxicated state, or when you're like fucking your sixth person that week, or whatever the Band-Aid you're using is, that's when you're happy, even though, no, that's not it. That's not it.
There's also that low hum that all of us are dealing with. It's like watching yourself in the mirror age, watching your friends pop off the planet, knowing that you're going to die, knowing that the things you love the most are, and then running that cycle. But that low hum, like I'm addicted to Twitter. I love Twitter. It's my favorite social media. But in January, when I was working on myself, all of the stuff in the world, these little news blips, all of like the dark, like horrible atrocities that were just scrolling through my feed that I just scroll by, I realized that there were just these little stones in my shoe. And it's all the stuff we're trying to ignore. Like, I was just doing a podcast the day the Charleston thing happened, and the two hosts were like, I don't think I can do this today. And they were just like, this is horrifying and I don't feel good. And I was just like, you have to understand, this is a thing that happened. It happened. And you can attach it to your personality. If you take on all of this, the world stuff, it's asking too much of yourself.
Damn,
and
right.
You will be exhausted. And so I took a month break from Twitter and I just, it was like, I was relieved of all these like bad things that weren't in my day-to-day life. I'm actually like walking down the street. Nothing bad is happening to me. I'm having a good day. And it was like I'm standing in this little stagnant 1 inch of polluted water of just like the world, like the just the bitterness and the horror that we all just like have to block out, because if we just sat there just like we'd be on our knees all day like, oh my god, this fucking world is just horror.
Yeah.
But it was like this 1 inch of stagnant water that I realized like all day as I was walking around, my socks were just wet with this gross water. And then I just like relieved myself for that a month, and then I came back and I was like, oh, I thought I would miss it, but I didn't. But now I'm like actively enjoying it. But all those little atrocities and horrors and things, just that low frequency that's always there.
Always there. Yeah. So that it's so fun to use to start naming these worlds. It's really fun to play, just play around this idea, because it's not just Ram Dass who talks about it. Gurdjieff talks about it. So many varying people talk about this concept of the onion layered multiverse that exists simultaneously. So you have all these various subjective universes that you have access to, as though you are an interdimensional traveler. You could actually move from one universe to the next in any given second. For example, you could say the present moment. Now, you could say the present moment is actually the name for a world. That's a name for the universe, a specific dimension. And you can call that dimension the present moment, even though it's kind of boring. You could actually make up your own name for that universe if you wanted to, you know? Call it anything that you want. Think of a name for it. What do you want to call it? Something cool.
The Marshmallow Fluff World.
Marshmallow Fluff World. Okay, so let's talk about it, because it is kind of like that. Present moment, no matter what's happening, man. No matter what's happening. This is that thing that happens where the car accident has happened, the diagnosis has happened, the breakup has happened, the whatever. This whatever has happened has happened. The mother dying has happened. The friend dying has happened. This is the universe where all whatever the worst possible fucking thing that could have happened has happened. You've been cheated on, you've cheated on some, whatever you've done, whatever the thing is, right? It's that weird thing that happens in the midst of all of that, where somehow you pull yourself just into this right now, just like what you're saying with Twitter, and you look around, you're like, man, what a beautiful day. Wow, this is a beautiful day. I feel really good right now. For whatever reason, it's when so the horror happens, whatever it is, the night before, right? And you wake up in the morning, right? And before your mind can update, can remind you of like, you remember what happened last night? Oh my God, it really happened. Right before that happens, you wake up with that incredible, peaceful, tranquil feeling like, ah, oh, what a great night's sleep. And then it comes zooming in. So that's a world. You know, you woke up in heaven and then your mind was like, no, let's travel to the other world now, because that's where our home is. And you can come up with a name for that. One popular name for the world of the horror, heartbreak, sadness, anger, the Instagram bitterness and jealousy world, or whatever you want to call that, there is a very popular name for that world. It's called hell. And hell, when you're in hell, look, man, I'll tell you, if you really want to get a taste of hell, and that is a convenient word, I'll have to invent a shitland, flat zone. You can come up with a lot of different names for it, but whatever you want to call it, if you really, this is what I realized, man. I just took, I went to Electric Daisy Carnival and took some MDMA, and I didn't do it the right way. I didn't do it the right way. And the way that you're supposed to do it is you prep with some serotonin precursors for a few days prior. And after you start taking those right away, because you are going to experience a huge depletion of the serotonin, happy juice, in your brain. And so, you know, while I was on, while I was enjoying the experience, it's obviously like one of the great, beautiful experiences accessible via chemicals currently today. And I was going into myself, doing what I thought was the work, you know, sitting there, like focusing in on my heart chakra, letting it open up, taking note of how incredible it feels with a fully open heart chakra, running through the list of things I feel guilty about or things, places where I think I've done wrong or been wronged, and letting the MDMA state forgive each of those moments, right? Great. It was great. But then fucking Tuesday rolls around, right? Tuesday. Suicide Tuesday, as they call it. And that's where your brain is like, sorry, out of gas, no more serotonin because you fucking depleted the entire bank account, you fucking asshole. Remember how we're building up all that sweet, great serotonin? You've been jogging. You've been fucking working really hard. You've been keeping to your goddamn schedule and making lists and fulfilling. Remember all that stuff where we're doing all the serotonin? We built it up and stored all that wonderful shit in the bank account. And then you went on a fucking experiential shopping spree like some kind of Beverly Hills wife or some shit at EDC. Now welcome to fucking hell.
Yeah.
And bam, Tuesday, everything sucked. Everything gone. All is lost. And I'm laying in bed, fully depressed, rolling through my Rolodex of things I enjoy in this world, from Witcher to food to sex to comedy to podcasting to anything. And every return, all my mind was saying with every frame that I popped in there was, now, pointless, awful, useless, disgusting, horrible, boring, awful, terrible. And then I realized, oh my God, this is the lesson I'm getting from ecstasy. Mm-hmm. It's not the sweet feelings. It's the empathy that I now have for folks who have fucking serotonin depression.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ, Dustin. If your fucking serotonin's wonky, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
I just got it back for the first time because I do have, and I found out like I have a vitamin D deficiency. It's like all this, which can cause depression and muscular pain and all this stuff. But yeah, I have, it's, I think there's this fundamental belief because, you know, the elation sometimes is too much for me. When I'm happy and full of joy, sometimes that's overstimulating. But it's this fundamental belief that if I'm going to be this happy, I'm going to pay for it later.
Yes.
And, you know, like, I love doing cocaine, like, occasionally.
Yeah.
But I have chronic sinus problems, and as I get older, they get worse. And, you know, 3 or 4 months out of the year, I'll just have a really bad sinus infection. But every time I've done cocaine, and I really like it. Like, I'm not weird on it. It makes me really happy. I'm very kind. I don't do too much.
Yeah.
But every time I do it, for one night, I will have the most brutal 2-week sinus infection. Where no neti pot, nothing's getting through. It's just horrible. And I can't do it anymore. And when somebody offers, you know, I just have to figure out, like, but it makes me feel so good and so happy in the moment. On the weekend when I finally get a day off and I'm hanging out and somebody just wants to key something. And now I have to make a decision. I can't, maybe occasionally if I want to suffer through it. Because I don't know how you feel about
MDMA. Let me give you some fatherly advice.
Yeah.
Don't do cocaine.
Yeah.
Ever again. Stay away from that shit. This is the – man, and I really think I'm staying away from MDMA. I think that's it for me, man. I think got the message, hanging up the phone. There's other ways to get to that state through organics. On the way back, we're listening to Terrence McKenna, who's like – you know, and he's giving a lecture, and we get to this – point in the lecture where, you know, he's like, you know, running through the drugs, and we get to this point with like someone asks him, what about MDMA? He's like, oh, MDMA, well, if, and he starts talking about the there's a and I can't remember the name for it, but there's basically a terminology for when is this drug going to kill you. In other words, like with mushrooms, if you would need to eat like, who knows how much, like approximately like half, who knows, half a pound or a pound of mushrooms to OD on the fucking things.
And that's mostly just a heart, major heart attack, right? Like,
yeah.
Can't OD on them. That's just, like, completely just your heart exploding from panic.
Or it's just, like, you just wake up in the dimension that you actually exist in where this is a dream. And here everyone's like, oh, my God, he died. But you just woke up in heaven or whatever. From who the fuck knows? But MDMA, and, you know, McKenna, he prefaced this with, listen, MDMA is very useful. It heals relationships, which it truly does. It presses reset on relationships. I am very grateful to that substance in my life for so much that it's done for me. Real actionable things have come from that substance. Real big changes have come from it for any of you out there who really love it. And I think that it has great therapeutic benefits, and I hope it's prescribable. Right. But so I don't mean to be saying don't do MDMA or that I'm dissing it or anything like that. I'm just saying I think I've gotten what I need to from that substance. But there's a bit of advice that I've heard after having said all that. Let me just contradict it. Some advice I've heard: avoid white powders. Have you ever heard that before?
No.
Avoid white powders. And the more I think about it, the more it's like, holy shit, that's very, like, that really makes sense. Because what falls into the category of white powders? Cocaine, MDMA, sugar, flour. If you go through it all, it's generally not that fucking great, man. The white powders are pretty bad. What the amount that they make you pay for them financially and neurologically seems to be a little bit more than what they give you in your life. It's a little bit too expensive, especially if you're like you and me and I battle depression and you have borderline personality disorder. I don't know, man. I wouldn't fuck with it.
Yeah. It was just like a decision I made very recently. It's not worth being sick. And it's also not a very good high. You know what you're saying. But, you know, I just did this podcast with Slumber Party with Ellie in Georgia, and this woman, Deanna Russo, I've met them before. They're just the sweetest, you know. The last time I saw her was at her friend's memorial, and her husband, Michael Cassidy, are just the most sweetest, coolest couple. And I don't really know much about her. And we did this podcast, and at the end of it, Ellie and Georgia were like, okay, what is this time as a flat circle stuff? You're like, what is this Matrix reality is a hologram stuff you're posting online? Like, what are you talking about? So I went in this little rant about, you know, our reality just being the same as a dream state, and there's just like bigger things at large, and, you know, the holographic brain theory and a lot of like the computer simulation stuff. And then Deanna was like, oh, I've seen it. I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, we were in Joshua Tree and we always wanted to do ayahuasca, but we were just camping and we just saw this white dome and we walked up to it and we're like, is this like an ayahuasca thing? And they're like, yeah, come in. So they're like, we always wanted to do it, so let's do it. And I've never heard anybody talk about reality and their experience with such love and compassion. And I'm going to butcher it, but the way she articulated it, like, really affected me. But she was just saying, like, yeah, I left this dimension and I was looking down on it and I just saw that we are this larger entity and we come to Earth. Every night we leave it and we're constantly leaving this reality and we come to Earth to have a body and to feel joy and to feel pain. We make a conscious decision to come back down here as humans and feel all that stuff.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, and I did it once and I don't feel like I ever have to do it again. And just the way she explained it was just so beautiful. But it's like, yeah, I don't need to do it again. It gave me all the information that I needed from it, and I saw that the behind the curtain is what she was telling me about. And she just, it's not that it was out of right field. I don't know her very well, but I just didn't expect her as a psychedelic person. And she's like 9 months pregnant. She's telling me the story, and I was like, God, this is the like luckiest kid ever. He's gonna have the coolest parents.
By the way, you're luckiest mom. You're on a camping trip. What? I don't get this. She's on a camping trip and stumbles upon a white dome.
There are apparently things in California where they set up these white domes as like ayahuasca retreats, where there's people that aren't on it and they're gurus and they're guiding people. And I guess they're happening all over and they heard about them. And then they accidentally were camping and saw one in the distance and walked up, and they're like these big ayahuasca tents that are like domes. And there's people going out to the desert and doing ayahuasca.
And the people there are like, oh, hey, what's up? Yeah. Yeah, come in.
Yeah.
Take some ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a miracle. Mm-hmm. That's a come on, man. That kind of stuff to me, that is not an accident. That stuff doesn't happen accidentally. That's
the rabbit in Alice in Wonderland.
That's Hunter S. Thompson's fantastic quote. You don't find LSD. LSD finds you.
And so true. So true.
Yeah, man. These states of reality, for example, the ayahuasca state of reality, I like to – lately I've really been considering the concept of the varying dimensions that I exist within and how the subjective – the science covers the material universe really well, but it can't – cover subjective universes. It can't cover the varying shades that we place upon the superstructure of matter that exists in the external universe. And that is what I'm really interested in right now, because I do think that it's a form of dimensional, interdimensional travel. Mm-hmm. It's just that our interdimensional travel, we've gotten confused by comic books to think that we travel from this place that we're in right now to some place where trees can talk and then the sky is green or some mm-hmm. ridiculousness like that, when it's like, no, the sort of traveling that we're doing here is traveling from the universe of borderline personality disorder, or the universe of cocaine, or the universe of jealousy, or the universe of fear, or the universe of Twitter bitterness or whatever that is, to other universes that we've heard about. Because we've heard about a lot of the other universes, haven't we? Like, in Europe, for the longest time, people were like, "Yeah, there's an entire other fucking continent out there." Like there was like whispered of this other continent out there. There's a whole other place. In the same way, we hear about this from folks like Ram Dass or Jack Kornfield or Buddha or Jesus. You always hear this weird story, which is like, "I say to you, the kingdom of heaven is near." What the fuck does that mean? What are you talking about? Like, what could that possibly mean? It sounds like bullshit, but the idea is like existing simultaneously to this dimension that we're in right now, however you feel, might be a little hungover, might be a little tired, whatever it may be. There is, according to a lot of people who describe it in a lot of different ways, a state of perfect nirvanic bliss. And the goal of life, or one great goal of life outside of getting in shape or having a great family, is to move from this realm that we're in right now to ascend to this other realm, which is also existing right now in this place. And that's what inner work is. That's what going to group therapy is. That's what whatever it is that you're doing, which has as its end goal a state of not burning in the fires of your own emotions.
Yeah. I've been thinking about these concepts because I do believe that time is cyclical. And I do believe that we will live this life again and again and again and again. And it's already happening at different stages. But I don't, because I think
you tweet something like that, brother. You're talking about the Nietzschean concept of, what does he call it? Something return, perpetual return.
Yeah.
What's that called?
I'm spacing, but it's, what is the fucking word? Diminishing return?
No, not diminishing returns. The idea is that when you die, it's like you're a DVD. And it just plays again and 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 again. And it goes on forever. So if you are more happy in your life than you are sad, then you are in heaven. And if you are more sad in your life than you are happy, then you are in hell.
Yeah, but here's the nightmare of it, is that in quantum physics, you can't have a beginning without a finite end. Even though we experience reality in these little pictures of nanoseconds of moment to moment to moment to moment, time is not linear. From a fourth dimensional look at the third dimension, anything in the fourth dimension looking down on the third dimension would not only see us, it, they would see it like flat, but they would also see everything that's ever happened. They would see finite ends to our universe and time, and they would be like these little tubes that would be like a blur. And so this, I've been running these thought experiments, but like, because I always be like, okay, parallel universe theory, why is the one we're in so lame and boring and like mediocre? Why isn't there one where like we're, it's a utopia, or I'm like I have superpowers? Because
yeah,
technically to them they're like any possible outcome can happen. But you know what I believe in?
What?
I believe that every living thing caught in this feedback loop, when they relive the cycle, just dies at another nanosecond later. Every cycle, you just die a nanosecond later, and then that's what affects the outcomes of things. Mm. It's that blade of grass that withers away, that the bug doesn't get to eat, that doesn't pollinate this, that it's every time you do the cycle again, you get a little farther and farther and farther. And if that's what the Buddhists are talking about achieving nirvana. So it's the idea of like, yeah, having free will, but making the decision to be happy and put the work in. But maybe that's already predetermined. Maybe at the end of this cycle in my life, because I'm having a ton of like hard work, car breaking down shit still, just almost there, just almost seeing like I'm like a horse with the apple tied to its head. I can see it, and I believe that you know, I won't live like a perpetual dorm student soon. Like, I see the end. I can see everything I'm working towards, kind of. But maybe in this cycle, it does end with me being happy because I'm surrounded by love. And maybe, like, an infinite amount of cycles ago, I never made it to L.A. Maybe I popped off sooner and I never got to experience this. And I never got to work with my heroes and be on this podcast and have all these beautiful moments. So maybe this cycle ends with me achieving next step above nirvana. Maybe I'm discovering all this mindfulness and this Buddha stuff because in this cycle, I'm going to get there. I don't know.
You know what's a fun thing you could do to switch up what you just said is instead of saying I'm, say he, and then repeat the same thing again but with using he instead of I'm. It's really trippy because You're like, you know, maybe in this cycle, he will achieve nirvana. In this cycle, it feels like he has an apple in front of his head that he is lured by. In this cycle, he is working very hard, because what the idea is that in everything you just described, you have the inevitable awareness, and then you have the thing that it's aware of, right? So here you are, here he is, here's Dustin, a being entangled in all of these complexities that every single person on this planet gets inevitably entangled into, right? But to even know that that's happening, you have to have this sense of awareness of the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way that you're aware of this microphone in front of you, you're aware of your life, right? Mm-hmm. You're aware of your life. You're aware that all this shit's going on. But you're not the microphone. And so in the same way, how can you then be this Dustin who's entangled in this particular karmic web of activity, right? So this is the zoom out, right? This is where we do that. This is where we want to zoom out of the great third dimensional map that we're talking about and pop into that place where we're actually the fourth dimensional beings gazing out on the strange ocean of matter that we currently have gotten entangled in via our attention being magnetized to our bodies. And that once you start doing that shit, you've popped frequencies. So instead of it, oh, at the end of the life, I achieve this state of nirvana, it's like, no, right now. Flip the switch. Bam! Now I'm a being watching the unfolding of this one particular harmonized cloud of atoms and that calls itself Dustin Marshall as it evolves or unfolds into the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm saying? So now You've become a new thing. Now you've been – this is why in so many different religions again and again they have this concept of being born again. Born again. You get born now, brother. Not at the end of this motherfucker. Not at the end. Now. The mind is always like, maybe at the end of this thing it gets better. maybe down the line, down the road, a few steps in, a couple more moves to the left, a couple more moves to the right, push this little, if I take this little fucking pile of phenomena and move it over here to this corner, and then I take this pile of phenomena and move it over there to that corner, and then I bring this pile of phenomena here, and once I get those phenomena piles hooked in together, then that's going to create these other piles of phenomena that we call money, and then with those piles of phenomena, I'm going to move, and then somewhere in this insane machine that we've created, ah, I've done it, now I'm great.
Yeah.
No way, man. No way.
Well, and then, yeah, and then we keep talking about the fourth dimension like it's separate from us. If Einstein says there's 11 dimensions, whatever that fucking means, I can barely comprehend this four. I try, you know, I really like it aesthetically and this idea, but
yeah.
If everything in the universe is one and connected, then that means we are in the multiverse. We are connected to the fourth dimension.
Yes.
Every dimension.
Yes.
We are it. And if that exists, then that's a part of us too. But that's the thing we're learning. It's a huge part of this program is radical acceptance, is radically accepting despite in the face of suffering, despite in what's happening to you, that it is just a thing that's happening to you. And instead of suffering, letting it, watching it happen to you. And so that's what I've, if this is the thing that comforts me about this Nietzschean point of view, is that, if, and this is like, you know, there's a great 4-part special on Amazon Prime right now by Nova called The Fabrics of Time, Fabrics of Space. It's an amazing, it talks about time and quantum physics, and it's the most up-to-date about, like, the science they know right now. But I am comforted by the fact that if this has happened an infinite amount of times, if the rest of my life has already happened and I'm just experiencing it, then I can just let go, stop berating myself, stop abusing the people in my life, stop suffering, and just watch this thing happen to me. And that to me is makes
him.
Me very him. That to him makes him very happy. Is that I don't have to worry, or he doesn't have to worry. That is really hard to do.
Isn't it weird?
He doesn't have to worry. He can just sit back like it's a ride. As Bill Hicks said, don't worry, don't be afraid, this is just a ride.
To quote Tim Leary, pick up your legs and float downstream.
that's the key to not even happiness. Like the Buddhist thing, you know, a lot of the time I the Buddhist stuff, I was like, I feel like they're just trying to make you okay with being miserable and poor. It's just about being okay with that. But
they're trying to get you to put down your fucking pacifier, man. And only in this case, the pacifier of the universe is the human body. They're just being like, listen, you're a little old universe, 13.8 billion year old universe. You're a little bit old to be sucking on that fucking pacifier that you've given a social security number to. let's see if we can put this little security blanket of physical manifestation down for a second. And see if things are really so terrible if we do that. And just like any child at first, when you start doing that, your ego throws a temper tantrum. Mm-hmm. You start whining and crying and like, I want to be something, though. I want to be a thing. I want to be a thing. I want my fucking blanket.
Yeah.
Fine. Keep the blanket then. That's the way it works. It's like, okay, hold on to it for another trillion years. Go ahead. We don't care. This thing repeats again and again and again. Hold on to that fucking pacifier until the mountains have been goddamn eroded into valleys, until all the planets have transformed into dust. Hold on, because there's no such thing as time.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, you get the big level up, right? You get the big thing where for a second you pop out of the attachment and addiction to the self, and you get to experience that amazing moment that happens from time to time in a person's life, usually via psychedelics or love, some love-oriented thing, where you look around and you're like, wait a minute. This isn't anything like I thought it was. Wait, what is this place? This is a completely new place I'm in here. This is not human life. This is not what I thought my life was. This is something that I don't understand. This is something that I don't know about. This is something I never expected. It's not like anything I thought it would be. And that, sir, as far as I'm concerned, that is enlightenment. It's the constant state of being a child in the universe and being like, whoa, fuck. It's just like when we get stuck in ourselves, you know? That's where everything gets so complicated. When you're, you know, just as you would be. If you're on a, if I take you and I shove you on some roller coaster at Six Flags and you've never been on a roller coaster before and you start thinking the fucking roller coaster is real, you're not going to have a great time.
No, I'm terrified of them. I did go to Six Flags recently, and the first one I was on, I just disassociated. I just left my body, and my girlfriend and her friends were like, that was really scary, because I was so terrified. There's just, I just went somewhere else. I just left my body. I was like, I can't be experiencing this. But it's, we are, we're creatures of order, and we need repetition to feel alive. We're trying to make sense of pure chaos. And we're trying to look at this place and these concepts in this universe and make sense of it. That's where you get lost up, and that's where you suffer. And we're such creatures of order. We're that's why, you know, we're willing to praise, you know, a president who's doing amazing things, but also who's bombing other countries, who people who are building our roads for us because there's a pothole in the street in the neighborhood you live in. You're not going to go out and fill it up with gravel and take care of it yourself. Somebody will take care of that.
Yes.
We are willing to give up parts of ourselves and our security and in order to just have somebody organize it for us.
Yes.
Fucking build the road so I can just build a car so I can just drive to work. Also, a car is fucking unreal. Like, who, like, engineering, like, figuring those out. Like,
everything.
Yeah. And then we're just like, we don't want to know. We just want order and we want to just go down these paths and we, it'd be too much. We'd just be on our knees worshiping the sun if we just sat and had that baby psychedelic state all the time. You know what was really interesting?
What?
You know when you wake up in the morning from a dream state, there's like a few seconds where you are purely just aware and you actually assemble who you are and what you are. And there's a split second where you're just complete awareness like a child.
Yeah.
The other day, this, for some reason, happened to me for almost, like, 30 seconds. And I woke up, and the sun, there's a big window behind me, and the sun was coming through, and I looked over at my girlfriend, and I thought, wow, this is a beautiful woman. This is just a beautiful woman. Yeah. And I put my arm on her, and I hugged her. I didn't even know her name. I didn't even know who it was. It's like, who is this beautiful woman in my bed? And then I had to, and then I made sense. It's like, oh, this is my girlfriend. But there was just this crazy moment where I was looking around and I was just truly experiencing it with that baby awareness. The only time I've ever had that was when I was like on mushrooms, like looking at a fire for like I was seeing fire for the first time or something.
Yeah, it's like neurologically your brain is like, oh shit, construct the prison cell. It's for 1 second we were completely free and outside of the bonds of our ego and everything was just incredible. And you know, but the prison's fun, and being in prison's fun.
It serves a function. What are we going to do? It'd be completely boring if we didn't have this drama.
Oh, I see. Now that's where I disagree with you. I think that the drama becomes a lot more fun and a lot more enjoyable when you realize that it's just a game that you've gotten too committed to. And then all of a sudden the drama becomes like a game and it's fun instead of it being like the thing like everybody gets into, especially when it comes to relationships, business relationships, romantic relationships. You get too sucked into the game and all of a sudden you turn into one of those YouTube video guys who's embarrassed because they call it rage quitting. Have you ever seen that? So funny.
No.
Oh, Google rage quit on YouTube. It's so funny.
what is it?
And the reason it's funny is because it brings out, because when you're playing a board game, it's absurd. Like you really are engaged in a kind of like, it's a fun thing, but it's ultimately it's absurdity. You know, you're moving pieces around on whatever the board happens to be. Like I can remember the first time I rage quit, man. It was when I was like 8 or 9. It's a really old memory of mine. But
is it when you throw the controller at the screen?
Flip the board over.
Oh, yeah.
It's rage quit. You flip the board over, right? So you've gotten like so caught up in this game. You've gotten so caught up in the outcome. You've wanted to win so bad that when it finally comes to the point where you're going to lose, instead of just lose, you want to ruin it for everybody. So you flip the board over and you go, what the fuck?
Gross.
And it's so funny. And it's, well, it is gross. But, so on a board game, on a video game or board game level, when someone hurls a controller, smashes a TV, it's really, the grossness of it is amplified, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at a person, many people are living their life in that identical way in every single game that they're playing, because all human interaction is just a game. When you get into like transactional analysis and stuff, they're playing it with that same exact ridiculous level of competitive intensity. They're so caught up in it and they're miserable. And the reason they're miserable in life is very similar to why they're miserable when they're losing at that game. They think it's real. They've gotten so entangled in every single moment that they've become incredibly convinced that this is all there is. And the great bohemian revolutionary move, the path that has been marked on this map given to us by all the great teachers, it generally always starts with some way of recognizing that you are not your body, you are not your life, you are not your career, you are not your mental illness, you are not your physical health, you are not your beauty, you are not your hideousness, you are not your rage, you are not your love, you are not anything more than everything. And the moment you know these exercises, the more you do that, then all of a sudden you start getting these distant, a little bit of fucking wiggle room in between you and the drama. A little bit. It doesn't work. I mean, it certainly doesn't fucking work for me. You know, I still fight. I obviously fight with my girlfriend. I still get caught up and deeply caught up in the drama of the fucking thing. But from time to time, when you play around with experimenting with what filter you want to look at the universe through, and just for a second, you allow yourself the fantasy that you're not some interdimensional tubule repeating itself over and over and over and over and over and over again. That's all you are. But instead, you allow yourself the fantasy that you are an infinite field of consciousness that is playing a really fun game called human life.
Yeah. And we're all spoiled brats that we get to be here at all. Like, you're immediately coming out of the womb spoiled that you have a body at all. Like, you're even here.
Yes.
You just got plucked from nothingness. Fucking great for you, lotto winner.
Lotto winner!
Yeah, you won the fucking lottery, but we're immediately just like, I deserve this, I want this. And then we look around at a bunch of people who know, you look up at your parents like, oh, they'll take care of everything. Everybody knows what's going on. When I was 13, I was like, oh my fucking God, none of these adults know what's going on either. They're just as scared and they're just trying to, they're doing their best, but nobody knows what's going on. So what you're talking about when you fight with people, that your emotional state, You can't be logical all the time. You can't be a robot because we're human beings. Those emotions, I mean, we can. Nothing's real. This is you know, it is a dream state with consequences. You only when you have dreams, you have boundless, infinite energy because there's no sensory reward system. So when you come back to this reality, this waking reality, when you pound on the table and you feel it against your hand, you're experiencing this loop. But all of these emotions have come into place because of evolutionary purposes. Like, why are there no new emotions? Like, if we're evolving, why is there fear, shame, joy, happiness? They all are created into our DNA, and they're things you're going to experience, and they are real in the video game. They are happening to you. Your feelings are valid, and that's the things that BPDs don't get. Their feelings aren't validated. You know, like, that's why when it's an age from, like, 3 to 5, when your parents don't validate your feelings. I remember, you know, I only got, when I was hurt or something, I was the boy in the family. I was supposed to be, like, a man and not be a pussy. And then, you know, my mom would do these horribly psychologically abusive things. And then when I'd be hurt by him, like, yell at me and then come back and give me all the love. And I had this flashback in therapy. My dad now is, like, into yoga, and he's this retired, like, super sensitive guy who has a spiritual awareness. Like, I love him. He's really involved. But, you know, I had this memory when I was a kid of my mom doing a horrible thing to me. and then just running to my dad in his recliner, like, you know, he was a huge alcoholic, and pulling on his arm and laying on the ground and just having a fit, and him just, like, putting his arm over with a full beer and then just dumping a beer on my face as, like, a three-year-old. And so BPD's fear abandonment more than anything. We just can't be abandoned. And then what we do is we create abandonment issues to feel we need somebody to validate us. I'm not alive if you're not. And so being yelled at, it's like, you know, in therapy, they're like BPDs feel like vapor. Marsha Linehan says they're emotional third degree burn victims. They're constantly in a state of emotional pain. And so when you're yelling at me, when my girlfriend's yelling at me, mad at me, that means I'm real. Wow. That means I affected her. That means I'm not vapor anymore.
Wow.
I'm a thing that affected you. Validate me. Validate my emotions. And you're feeling, you know, they did this experiment on ants, and they had the same kind of ant, and then, no, I'm sorry, two different kinds of ants from two different colonies, and they took one ant from each colony, and they painted a little stripe on it, and then they tied it to a piece of cardboard, and they put it in the dirt, and then they let, at the same time, each ant help it, because by nature, the ants would walk up and chew through the string and feed the other ant, but they only freed their own. They didn't free the other ant. They let it die because they're just trying to propagate their existence, their DNA.
Yeah.
And so the same with mental illness is it wants to be passed along. It's biological, it's cognitive. You're not just learning it. Some people are just born more sensitive. The anxiety, like a virus, it's these emotions are attached to you and they want to evolve with you.
Spooky.
And then you have to learn how to let them go and let them just happen to you and be like, oh, I did get angry. Well, and then you beat yourself up for being sorry. It's just, that's just a thing I did. That's just a part of me. That's human beings do that. I did that.
This, what you're talking about, I can totally see why they're using Buddhism as a model to help people with this, because that concept of being vapor, you know, the concept of being brought into existence by negative emotion from another person, by someone attacking you or abusing you. Now you exist. Now you have density instead of being nothingness. This quest for somethingness, this quest to be a thing, is not just a symptom of BPD. This is something that is considered one of the root sources of suffering for all human beings. And so it's really fascinating, the parallels. You know, Chogyam Trungpa, who's a very fierce teacher, I think, and I was listening to Terence McKenna, he was talking about Buddhism, and he was like, he's like, in the West, they soften it a little. But in the East, you're talking about this is pure nihilism. This is hardcore, you know, religious systems to negate and annihilate your entire self. Mm-hmm. And McKenna was, you could see, he's like, I just don't know that that's who I am or what I want. But, you know, that's McKenna. He was into, you know, he had his own thing going on. But Trungpa, you know, somebody who comes from the East, who came to the United States with a really unfiltered, unwatered down version of Buddhism, which is why a lot of people don't like him. And a lot of people, when they encounter his teachings, are like, fuck this. Fuck this. I am something. God damn it. I am fucking something. What are you talking about? I am something. He like really maps it out in the most beautiful way when he says that what we are is nothingness. The BPD sense of not being something, of being vapor, is not a disorder, but an actual tuning in to the reality of our situation here in this dimension. And that, just like so many other people, the escape from that experience of nothingness, which Trungpa compares to standing on a floor of razor blades with bare feet, the escape from that experience is to fabricate He compares it to someone standing on the floor of razor blades, looking up into the sky and creating the illusion of something to climb on top of. And that illusion of the thing to climb on top of is your identity. That's your problems. That's your trouble. This is what he calls the circumference of the mandala of your life. And so what you've done is you're like a termite that is burrowed into whatever the particular drama or trouble or, you know, the recurring patterns in your life, that no matter how wretched they may be, you're a drunk. You wake up in the mornings 5 out of 7 days with a fucking headache, feeling like shit. You have awful bowel movements and your body odor is terrible. Getting in fights with people that you love over absolutely fucking nothing, and you're not taking care of your body, you're poisoning yourself on a daily basis. By the way, not describing you, I'm just thinking of me when I'm drinking.
Well, no, but you're like, describing me on accident.
But well, it's all of us, man. It's all of us. I'm just like going through like, what's it like when I'm really shitting all over my existence?
Yeah.
And usually the way I do that is through booze if I'm going to do it. But so all of those like crappy aspects of every single day are still preferable to feeling formlessness, still preferable to merging into the whole, still preferable to allowing yourself to evaporate into the everything, which is your birthright. This is the prodigal son. This is the child lost in the wilderness who has no idea that he is the child of the great king. And finally, he comes back to his father's house covered in filth, stinking of Pall Malls and, you know, with stupid tattoos. And instead of being rejected by his father, he's brought back into the fold. And his father says, this is all yours. And this is the, you know, redemptive moment that's accessible to every human. Only it doesn't come from burrowing deeper into the illusion of the self. It comes from worming your way out of that and allowing yourself to die. Which is why my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who I have allowed into my heart, says, you must first die to this world to come to know me. And whoa, what a fucking thing to say, man. What a fucking thing to say, you know? I like the idea of being vapor. In fact, I like the idea of being precursor vapor. I like the idea of being the great blank precursor nothingness. That's a beautiful concept, man. It's incredible. It's just terrifying for all of us who've gotten used to holding on to the phantasmal handrails of our own neurosis as we move through the infinite field of time.
You're the thing blinking on the Word document before you write anything. Like, that's you. It's just this repetitive nothingness, this binary system of nothingness, reality. I think Christ also says the kingdom of heaven is within. And you can also equate that to ego death, is to constantly, you're constantly changing and you're constantly becoming a different person. And how many of us, you know, I look back at myself when I was 24 and I didn't know who I was and I was behaving like a douchebag online. I'm like, oh, what a little douche, you know? I look back at that person and I have to be compassionate about that person.
Yeah.
I was also like, oh, I did really cool things. But It's the ego death. It's greed. It's not even realizing you're in the transition. And day to day, I think more year to year, every September comes around and I have a huge, and I think about everything that's changed. And you as a person, like, changed, like me a year ago. Last time I did this podcast a year and a half ago, you know, not completely different person, but definitely a different person. I didn't have the light shine on me that something was wrong with me. I'm not supposed to put a judgment on it. But I didn't know I had what my mom had. I resent my mom for having it. I've talked to her in 3.5 years. And then all of a sudden I had to find out, wow, I'm just like her. Mm-hmm. Now I have to accept myself. And I'm not, you know, I haven't accepted myself yet. I've accepted that I have it. But I also feel, I also still hate myself for having it.
You do?
Yeah.
You hate yourself for having it.
Some fundamental thing.
If, like, your kitten had something, would you hate your kitten? Like if your kitten had fleas?
No.
If your kitten's had stinky poop? I'm just trying to think of what's the worst thing a kitten could do. I mean, your kitten's pissing all over your stuff.
Well, it's attacking you and hurting you. And I don't hate it, but in the moment, it's just like, oh, you're just never going to... This is your personality, and I raised you, and this is your... I have a BPD cat now, because I raised him like a son, and he can't go to the vet because he attacks people, or he's attacking our new kitten and stuff. And so I don't hate him. I'd be devastated if anything happened to him. You know, and it was just like, we were having this great day, and I was having a great day, and I was in the moment, and I was like, wow, this is a beautiful day. We've done all these things. We were coming home, and we were about to go home after this beautiful day, me and my girlfriend, hand in hand. And then a coyote, we're right in front of her house, and a coyote walks by with a house cat in its mouth with a collar with a bell on it, and the bell is just ringing, and he killed this cat, and he walked by us, and we were just like, oh, my God. And we went inside, and we were just so, like, affected by it. And then it put the candle out, like, immediately. But that coyote wasn't doing anything wrong. I mean, the coyote is being a coyote.
You know, man, you got one of the coolest gurus I've ever heard of, man.
You?
Sure. No, the fucking coyote. The guy who drove by and made you mad. You know, Ram Dass, sure. Ram Dass gets the old man in a blanket who can do miracles. Man, you've got this coyote who's teaching you you've got this guru who incarnates in the most beautiful ways, which is like, look. This is the world.
Yeah.
And instead of putting the candle out, it's like, oh, I've witnessed a miracle here. Because you know what you did see? You saw a fucking happy coyote, man.
Yeah.
Why is everybody on Team House Cat? Let me tell you something. I promise you this, my friend. That house cat with that dingling little bell on its sweet little collar has taken a lot of mommy birdies away from their baby birdies.
Yeah.
The baby birdies sitting in the nest slowly starving to death because in that fat-ass house cat's belly is a nice bird that it just ate that had been stalking all day. That's a fucking predator there, man. You're just looking at a predator with another predator in its mouth. You're looking at the beautiful interplay of this strange amalgamation of matter that has become aware of itself blending into each other like some incredible artist, the invisible paintbrush of an artist swirling the molecular shades of existence into each other. And it's fucking beautiful, man. It's beautiful and terrifying, isn't it? It's horrible and the worst. And then when you allow yourself to get pulled into that horror and the worst, and then you realize, oh God, being pulled into the horror and the worst, this is amazing too. So anyway, Dustin, yeah. I gotta say this. You are doing great, man. No matter the little bumps that are coming in your road, the little things that are happening, the Dustin now versus the Dustin that I have known, you seem more stable. You seem more tranquil than I've ever seen you. You seem something is happening for you. I can feel it. Like something's happening. You just can't be in a hurry about it. You know, I'm sorry to keep going back to Ram Dass, but I was just listening to this great lecture, and he's talking about how he began to realize that the sense of dissatisfaction that he was experiencing in his heart was not an indication of his failure as a human, but was in fact the feeling of his awakening, and that maybe that thing that you are currently you can't quite do, or that aching feeling or the cramping feeling that you're talking about, maybe the next time you really feel it, realize that what you're feeling is your metaphysical vagina being ripped open by the new Dustin that's being born.
That was the perfect Duncan Trussell quote. Well, and then if we're wrapping up, I just want to say, I do feel more balanced than I ever have felt. I think as you get older, I'm turned 30, and I think I had a lot of weird existential dread when I was 29, because I did all these beautiful things in my 20s, and I do feel myself getting slower, and I do feel myself becoming less remarkable, and I have to constantly, and I have to every year do something bigger and bigger. That's just my philosophy, like, while I'm here. But get help if you're, it's not worth, if even if you don't, no, if you're just fucking down, depressed all the time, just seriously, it's worth getting help, and don't kill yourself. Just keep going. It's worth getting older, because whether you become more numb to it, all the tiny little tragedies, all the like bosses that are mad at you that you feel bad about, all the times your car breaks down, all the little tiny tragedies. As you get older, like, whether it's numbness or jadedness, you're like, ah, the experience is like, I've done this before, I've been through worse. And that's helping me balance tremendously. And I am finally facing this shit head on and shaking my own hand and being like, you are loving yourself by taking care of yourself.
Yeah, that is it. You are. You're the universe that scooped up the little kitten of your current incarnation, just like you scooped up that little kitten that you rescued. And even though it's not going to happen as fast as you might like it to, it never does for anybody. It's got its own pace. It's happening, and that's beautiful. If you're all that matters is you're fighting the great jihad. As long as you're in the great holy war, as long as you're in the great holy war of awakening, of healing the little pixel of the biomass that's your physical body, then you're in the greatest possible situation you could be in, because everyone longs to fight in a holy war.
Jack Kornfield, War Within. Look it up. Yeah, it happens when it happens. And sometimes it doesn't happen, but just it'll happen when it happens. And as long as you're pursuing freedom and love, like, doors will just open up for you, like the door to the studio. And this has been the highlight of my year. I love you so much, Duncan.
I love you, Dustin. You're the greatest, man. These are so fun to do with you. How can people find you?
At Feral Audio on Twitter. I'm Dustin Martian on Twitter, like I'm from Mars. Feralaudio.com, we just added a bunch of new shows. Harmontown.com, we built our own independent streaming service for $5 a month, like ESPN quality, and we are going to build the same thing for Duncan.
Yes.
And
that was the big secret. You just gave the big secret away. I haven't told everybody.
Oh, you want me to cut it out?
No, leave it. What a perfect way to leak it out. Yes, friends, that is in the works. I'm getting my studio decorated, kind of, and Dustin can see I've got a tapestry up, but it's
fucking awesome in here.
It looks cool to me, man. Yeah, but that is on the way, friends. That is going to happen. I'm just figuring out the best way to do it to make sure that folks who want to subscribe to it get their money's worth and don't feel, and the folks who don't want to subscribe to it don't feel like they're getting ripped off because I start putting out extra content that folks are paying for. So that's...
We've had a lot of, with transitioning to this for Harmontown.com, we've had a lot of people kicking and screaming, but you know what? A lot of people are in support of it, and we're going to keep building this thing. So it's, if you've seen the movie Stop Making Sense, it's a Talking Heads movie. David Byrne comes out while the audience is sitting down. The stage is completely empty, and he sets a boombox down, and he has an acoustic guitar, and he starts playing. As the show goes on, all these guys are building the stage, like these union guys, and then slowly other band members come out and start playing keyboards, and then the drummer comes out, and then by the end of it, it's this huge spectacle. That's what we're doing. Harmon invested a lot in this. There's no third parties. Three people own it. Myself, this genius Kevin Day, who's building this, and Harmon. And we own it completely independently. We're doing it with integrity. It's going to be worthwhile. And the stuff we're talking about with Duncan is, it's cool because we have Duncan and Harmon and their own philosophies about how to do it. And it's really interesting. I think Duncan's going to use the technology and he's going to give you so
my
much.
Fantasy is this. I just want, my fantasy is that every Sunday we start doing a thing called, I don't know what to call it, family church or family gatherings, or I don't know what to call it.
So amazing.
Every Sunday I want to do this cool live stream show where I have guests on, and it just happens every Sunday, and you guys can tune into it. And you know, I've been playing around with what do you call it? Not trumpet. What's it called? It's the Periscope. Why did I think it was
Periscope.
Trumpet? But I've been playing.
We should start it. Call it Trumpet. We need a name for this thing anyway.
I've been playing around with that just to see, kind of play around with the idea of streaming stuff. But yeah, basically the idea is something like that once a week where it can be interactive, because what I really love about the live shows is the element of the audience getting to ask questions and to add their own two cents to it. So I'm trying to figure out a way to create that as part of the thing.
I mean, as a fan of the show and you, I think that's, I mean, we talked about something similar a long time ago, but this is it. That's going to be huge. And it's a small LLC. Duncan's going to reap the benefit. There's no evil corporations in there. When it happens, I think it's going to really connect you. And you'll always get the podcast for free, and nothing will change with that. And then if you want to just – because the streaming costs, since we built it, streaming costs a lot of money. And, you know, whether it's our thing's $5, about $2 or more goes to streaming costs, because the more people who watch it and how many times they watch it, because they can watch a live stream and download it, costs money. But just know that you're benefiting Duncan directly. You're helping the streaming costs. We're getting a little kickback.
Also,
it's all friends.
And I'm not doing, like, my, you know, Harmon, whatever, like, you know, it's Dan Harmon, creator of Community, super genius or whatever. And the show's great and all. And that's why he only charges $5. But my show to subscribe is probably going to be, we're looking at like $200 a month.
Yeah,
right
I
now.
Mean,
because
realistically,
I am adding
extra
$250 because I'm adding extra colors to my stream, because I've done a color analysis of Harmon's stream and I know the exact number of colors that tend to manifest in his show. My show is going to have at least 100 more colors. Go watch it. I mean, it's funny, but watch a Harmontown.
Yeah, but
you don't see chartreuse as much as you're going to see in mine. You're going to see
you actually expanded the light spectrum too.
I'm
found all these new colors.
I'm trying to expand the light spectrum, and that's also why this is, like, guys, costing me an arm and a leg. I've got a team of scientists working on actually expanding the light spectrum, and that's not cheap.
$350. I think you should.
I think it's going to be $350 a month. If anybody, you know, feels weird about that, feel free to let Dustin know.
Yeah, at Dustin Martian, you can yell at me.
Thank you, Dustin. You're the greatest.
Thanks
for listening,
man.
Guys.
Oh,
that was Dustin Marshall. You can follow him on Twitter at Dustin Marshall. He just said all that stuff. All the links will be at DougGutrussell.com. Thanks to Lynda.com for sponsoring this episode. Go to lynda.com/family hour and sign up for a trial membership. Teach yourself something, kiddo. Also, if you like this podcast, won't you give us a nice rating on iTunes, please? And give yourself a nice rating on the iTunes of the universe. Have a great week. I'll see you guys soon. Hare Krishna.